And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on this fine station, and also podcasts everywhere. That's right, both on the homepage as well as the radio show's page at richarddugan.com, as well as SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, I believe Player FM, a couple of others, Google Play. It's an interesting world in which we live. I marvel at the advancements in technology and innovation and so forth that have brought us to this place. And over the years of, for myself anyway, going from audio tape to vinyl to CDs and flash drives and file sharing and just all the incredible transitions in that regard. It's just amazing. So anyway, check out those websites that I've given you, those locations to listen to the podcast. I highly recommend that you go to the podcast and listen, because you are not going to hear the entire interview if you don't. There are only 50 minutes that are allotted to us on the radio broadcast. And sometimes we go longer than 50 minutes. With my guest today, I wouldn't be surprised. So you're going to want to dial in, call in, or not. You're going to want to click in to the podcast locations and listen to the whole thing. And when you do, we also encourage you to go to their website. We will be linked to them. And when you're listening to the SoundCloud links, there's a little grocery cart in the upper right-hand corner of the player, and that is a link to my guest's website. Put that in there myself. And so we encourage you to go there while you're listening to the interview, or after, whatever the case may be, to continue your evolutionary process. We also want to remind you that we are certainly appreciative of all support that comes our way. I can't thank you enough. If you have supported us in the past, thank you, thank you, thank you. And we'll take energetic support as well. That is always welcome. But it's always a process, of course, of as the case is, there's always an exchange. And in exchange for doing this broadcast, there's a nominal fee, but there's still a fee. And we encourage you, if you can, to help us out in that regard. And there's a PayPal account that we've set up specifically for that. My thanks and gratitude extend to everyone who has contributed and to those who will. And as I said, energetic support is also welcome. We have a returning guest to our program here on Tell Me Your Story, and I'm very excited about an inspirational call for conscious and shared wisdom with my guest. He is the author of the book, The Mosaic. It is a poetic and profound reminder by our guest, Daniel Bruce Levin, that we are each a unique and essential piece of the mosaic. And Daniel, it is great to have you back. After our first interview, I hated for it to end because we were on such a roll. So here we're rolling again, and thank you for coming back.
Absolutely. It's my honor, and thank you for having me. I look forward. I said it at the end of the last time, and then I've been a little negligent. I look forward in having more conversations with you off air as well as on air to see how we can work together, play together, because everything you're doing feels so simpatico to the things that I'm doing. And when we meet somebody for the first time and have that happen, I don't know why I still marvel at it, but I marvel at it. The world is so much more connected than we realize. And
yeah, it really is. And one of the aspects isn't just technology. I'm correct me if I'm wrong here, but the quantum physics is continually proving that fact, that we are connected, especially when you start taking a look at the energetics, the magnetism and energy and waves and all of those particular aspects, if you will. I mean, I think about radio waves, for example, as opposed to AM signal, as opposed to FM, where the signal is bounced off of the atmosphere and can just continues on. Whereas FM is line of sight, and how at night the signal is higher. And so people wonder, well, Why is it that while I'm sitting in Phoenix at 10 o'clock at night, I can hear a radio station in San Francisco, but at noon the next day I can't hear it? Well, that's because the atmosphere, that ceiling that the wave bounces off of, rises and then lowers, and it decreases the angle of ascent and descent. And so in the at night, it raises, and so the signal bounces even further. Well, those kinds of waves emanate from each one of us, don't they?
Absolutely, and it's fascinating because when I was growing up as a kid, there was a cartoon out called Dick Tracy, and Dick Tracy was a detective, and he had a watch that actually had a video on it, and that he could see things on his watch. And I thought, how cool would that be if that could ever come to be? And now we have them all along. We have phones that we carry in our pockets, our watches we can video to. The world is changing so quickly as we move from an age in classic Vedic philosophy. They talk about four ages, and we have been in the lowest age of possible. We have been in an age called Kali Yuga, which is an age where everything is defined by the form that it has. But we're shifting from the age of Kali Yuga into the age of Dwapara Yuga. And Dwapara Yuga is the age where everything is energy. And so it's only interesting. It's so interesting to me that everything now is shifting, that science is showing us that if we look at our bodies, excuse me, I have this cough. If we look at our bodies under a microscope, we will not see any form. We think we're so solid, but when we look at our bodies under a microscope, there's nothing solid there. All that exists is swirls of energy, neurons and protons and atoms moving so quickly, we can't even imagine. And so in the world that we see, that's why one of the big things about the mosaic is helping people to see what they don't see, because when we see it, we believe that's what it is. That's what the world is.
Yeah.
But in the world that we don't see, the world exists so much more alive, and there's so many billions of things we don't see that are there at the same time.
Yeah.
And so that's the beauty of it.
I have to say that as a kid growing up, I was thinking about this kind of thing. And I often thought, especially going through science class and then, of course, biology, where they would have, if it wasn't a model on the teacher's desk or on the lab counter, of a molecule, you know, with the neutrons, electrons, protons circling the nucleus of an atom and so on and so forth. And I thought, you know, that looks vaguely familiar, because I remember in science class they were showing us the same kind of model, only it was of our solar system.
Yes.
And I thought,
how fabulous.
And I have basically refined the analogy, if you will, to the extent that the macrocosmic world and the microcosmic world are mirrors of one another. And I find it fascinating when you talk about, of course, you know, right now, what we see is what's there, but which isn't, you know, as we move into that next age, it isn't. But I talk to people about the duality of this world, at least the duality as our minds have created. Because if you look at the macrocosmic world, and I don't know if we discussed this in our last interview, but my observation is that as all of these elements are flying around in the universe, galaxies are spinning, you have the supernovas exploding and creating new worlds, new bodies and so forth, things colliding into one another. As you watch that, let's just say through the Hubble telescope, You sit there in awe and marvel at the awesomeness of the universe.
Absolutely.
But you bring it down, and I call it the, you have the macrocosmic, mid-cosmic, as opposed to micro. Mm-hmm. You bring it down to the mid-cosmic level, our level, as we see and hear and taste and smell and touch. When you have those same kinds of events happening we go nuts. We say, oh, this is bad. This is terrible. This is awful. And even on the microcosmic level, when we, as medicine has started to show us, we start seeing those same kinds of things happen. Again, we're, oh my gosh, it's terrible. This is, and it's like, well, wait a minute. Wait, the rules haven't changed. You're sitting in the universe that you just said was awesome. So why isn't what's happening in the mid-cosmic and the microcosmic still awesome?
I love that question, and I don't know the answer to it. My guess is that everything is awesome when it's happening out there to something else. But when it happens within our own systems, that means the way we view the world has to completely change. And change for most people. I remember being at a Tony Robbins seminar one time, and he asked the audience, probably 5, 7, 10,000 people were there. He asked, how many of you like change? And everybody raised their hand, and he said, bull. You don't like change. You like the changes you can control, but you don't like the changes that are out of your control. And that's where most of us fall down. Most of us want to be in complete control of the world that we see. And when we start to realize that the world we see isn't even the world that really is, it's only a part of the world that is, then what happens? There's a certain pompousness to the belief system that what we see is what is, when there's so much out there that we know we don't see. When science tells us we're using 8% of our brain or 5% of our brain or whatever that number is, what does that mean to people? That means that, say, 90% of the capacity of our brain we haven't even realized.
Yeah.
What does that mean? I mean, we're operating in such a small little tunnel of existence, thinking that we've seen the whole world when we haven't.
Yeah.
And so let's bring that closer in. So how do I have the right to say what I believe is right and what you believe is wrong in any dimension?
Mm-hmm.
How do I have the right to say I see the world this way and you see it a different way? You're wrong. We don't have that right. It's a pompous a belief system based on a lack of knowledge and a fear that what we see is not all that is. Because if it isn't, we're opening ourselves up to a world of change that we're scared to death to encounter.
I mean, and there is a situation in this country in particular, but I'm sure that there have to be instances of this elsewhere in the world. But in this country in particular, and in this time in which you and I live, we've got a serious problem with allegations being hurled at one another, and the paradox, and it is a true paradox from my perspective, if you believe the allegations of the abused, then you're not believing the defense of the accused. If you believe the defense of the accused, then you're not believing the allegations of the abused. And it's like somebody's going to lose here, you know, because somebody's telling the truth and somebody's not. And it's fascinating to me to see this. And then I'll see this on the news and somebody will be sitting nearby and they will make a comment. Oh, they're lying. And, and all I can do is sit there. Yeah, and they're expecting me to either side with them or not, and I can't because I don't know, because I wasn't there. Yeah. And so I sit there and I'm going, well, you've got 15 or 1,500 people who have said, yes, this person did that, and the one person saying, no, I didn't do that. I wasn't there. I don't know. And they have created... they have created this catch-22 in our society where there is no presumption of innocence under our present system. You are now guilty. Your life is over. I mean, look at the number of people shortly following the 2016 campaign, the election, in government alone, who ended up stepping down, let alone members of the corporate world and the entertainment world, who stepped down even though there was no trial, there was no jury, there was no judgment, their lives are over.
Yeah.
And yeah. And this is it's a paradox, because what it does is it does the one thing that you are trying to counter, and that is it divides us, it separates us, and it continues to affirm basically one of the things that you talked about, that of course I love the fact that it's actually on the back cover of the book, in that it talks about what we see is not what is, but only what we see. So what we see is continued division, separation. We have a president who is a master at divide and conquer. You know, I'm not a fan of his, but it's not because of his politics. It's because he's a bully. And in my opinion, but I have forgiven him as well as myself for being taken in by this bully. I wish I could have done that in grade school when I was being bullied by these kids. I really wish I could have done that.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about how we can transcend that. How can we, if not repair the damage that's been done, how can we work back towards a reconnection or some level of connectivity that can start to facilitate our civilizations going on into the future? Because it seems like today there isn't going to be much of a tomorrow.
Yeah. So first of all, thank you for the passion in your question and for the personality of your question. I not only hear it, but I feel it from you. And what a beautiful ability you have to resonate so fully with the question you ask. And I really want to honor you for being that honest and that open. Hear my thoughts. It doesn't mean they're right. It's just my thoughts. And so what I invite everybody to do is take everything I say with the trash can rule in effect. If it resonates, hold on to it. If it doesn't, just don't keep it in your mind for 1 minute. Throw it into the trash. There's nothing about what I'm saying that has to be right or wrong. It just is. The opportunity here is to see things differently than the way we've seen them before, because the way we're seeing them is causing us to have these divisions, these thoughts, this suffering, this unhappiness for the most part. We find what we're looking to see. Let me just say that again. Not only is what we see not all that is, but what we see is what we're looking to find. And so if you look into the life of any human being, any person that has existed, from the greatest saint in the world to the worst sinner, and you're looking for goodness, you will find goodness. If you're looking for something wrong, you will find something wrong. And the world has become so small now from the internet. We know everything that's happened in a person's life. Something happens in a town square and there are millions of people or tens of people taking out their phone and videoing. The accountability factor for the actions that we have today is so much more than the accountability factor than it was when I was growing up, like 40 or 50 years ago. If you think about if you ask people in the country today, maybe not today, I don't know, because it's gotten so separated. 10 years ago, if you would have asked if John Kennedy was a good president, most of the people would have said he was fabulous. He represented an era of almost royalty in the American society. He had a beautiful wife. He was charismatic. He was young. He got assassinated for what he believed, but he was a good man. If you would take that life of John Kennedy today and put it in the White House now, he would be impeached for sexual things. He would be on the forefront of the Me Too movement. He would be obliterated for the affairs that he was knowledgeably having in the White House. So the world has become so small now, we have to choose what it is we want to see in the world that we're looking at. If you look at a mosaic, the reason why I love the book that was written through me and the image of it in general, a mosaic, the pieces don't connect by the whole side of one piece being connected to the whole side of another piece or all four sides being connected. Sometimes they only connect at the very tip of one piece to the very tip of another, meaning that their connection point is maybe 2 or 3% of their entire piece. And yet it's enough of a connection to continue the building of the mosaic so that it can make a connected reality. What we've forgotten in the world today is that all of us have commonality, no matter what we believe in. All of us have some point of commonality. And if we would focus on the place where we're similar, even if it's 2% of what we believe, that would change the structure of the way our world operates. When I was in seminary years ago, the Rebbe said to me, "Your problem is you don't know the difference between truth and honesty." And I said, "What do you mean? There's a difference between those words?" He said, "Absolutely." I said, "Tell me what they are." He said, "Honesty is if you would come home in the evening after being gone for the whole day and you would say to your wife, 'Baby, I thought about you every minute of the day, except for 45 seconds when this beautiful woman walked by. I couldn't take my eyes off of her.' What do you think your wife would hear? She wouldn't hear that you thought about her for 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 15 seconds. She would only hear the 45 seconds that you thought about somebody else, and how could you do that? The truth is, so that's honesty. I thought about you every minute of the day except for 45 seconds when this girl walked by. The truth is, baby, I thought about you almost every minute of the day. What I think we need to come back to as a civilization as a world is we need to come back to what the truth is rather than what honesty is. Doesn't mean we should be dishonest. But when honesty gets in the way of the truth, truth has to come first. Does that make sense to you?
It makes perfect sense. It really does. And I have to relate this. At the time of our conversation, there was a telephone conversation between the president and the governor of the state of California. Now, I wasn't privy to the details, so I don't know what the truth is. All I know is what the aftermath, the postscript was on the side of the president, who was quoted, and I'll have to paraphrase here, but basically was quoted as saying that the governor of California said that I'm the smartest man he has ever known in the White House. And he'll probably deny it, but that's what he said. And this is where we have gotten to in our world, where people can basically say whatever they want. And now it's almost as if my response is, "That's nice," not, "Oh, I agree with you," or "I disagree with you," but I'm going to take the position that I don't know because I wasn't there.
Right.
I didn't hear the conversation. I didn't see the event. I didn't experience that. And all I did, I saw it on TV, and I almost have to go to that far extreme and say, because I saw it on TV, I don't even know if it really happened.
Right, right.
Look how good CGI has gotten, and animation, and with Photoshop and whatever video forms of Photoshop there are, you can make anything happen. I mean, all you have to do is go back to the 1930s and radio with Orson Welles and the War of the Worlds.
Totally.
And the people, many of them, bought it. They thought we were being invaded.
Yeah, they jumped off of 50-floor buildings.
Yeah.
I mean, they committed suicide. So really what so I love to go from situations to working realities. In a world where we no longer trust our information sources, what can we trust? And the problem is we have gotten so far away from actually knowing ourselves and trusting our own instincts. If you look around the world that I live in today, and I meet a lot of conscious people, I still don't see many people that know themselves. I see a lot of people who, when I was growing up, people used, and they didn't laugh at me. I wasn't made fun of or bullied or anything like that because I was a big guy and I was popular and I was good in sports and I was smart. But people would look at me, and especially in my teens, as I left businesses, the opportunity to be involved in the business world and make a lot of money, to hitchhike around the world and in search of myself, they would say to me, "Aren't you done searching for yourself? Aren't you ready to grow up and like have a profession and do something?" And I just said, "No, I'm not." And I'm so happy that I had the courage in that moment to do that. Because what I see now as I look back on the world from my 63 years and I look into the world that I see now, I see a world where everybody got pretty much what they were looking to find. The people that went into business made money, but they didn't find contentment. They didn't find that part of themselves that they know themselves. They're still insecure. They're still afraid of that the way they see the world will be challenged, and that will mean they're not good enough. They still feel not good enough. But I was looking for something else. And if you read the book, The Mosaic, what you'll see is the situation that happened for Mo, the protagonist, is he lost his parents. And that changed his entire reality. He set out to find that place called heaven that the adults told him was where his parents were. And he sat with the people of the world, common, ordinary people, regular people, a trash man, a gardener, a waitress, a blind woman, a street artist, a homeless man. It didn't matter who they were. They weren't your classic archetypes of people who you would think you would go to find heaven. But he sat with them and listened to their stories, just like your show does. Tell me your story, right? Mm-hmm. And he listened to their stories. And in listening to their stories, what he found was these people were not at all like he preconceived them to be by his notion of this is what a trash man is. They became a completely different being. And if my son were right now to come to me and say, "Dad, I want to become a trash man." Before I wrote the book, I might say, "Why would you want to do that? That's the lowest possible profession you could be. It doesn't take any intelligence. It doesn't take any ability. You're wasting your life. Why would you be a trash man? You have so much potential to be something more." But if he wanted to be the trash man of the Mosaic, I would invest every dollar that I had in him. Because the trash man in the Mosaic, as the story goes, pulls up alongside Mo as he's walking. Mo has nothing on his back, nothing that he's holding on to, only the clothes on his back and his hands are free. And the trash truck pulls up next to him in the midst of driving along. It stops. And the trash man leans out of the truck and says, "Do you have any trash that you want me to take?" And Mo at first glance thinks, "What are you, crazy? I don't even have anything on me. There's no trash around me. The streets aren't dirty. I don't have anything to give you. Like, can't you see?" Mm-hmm. And he looks into the eyes of the trash man as he's about to speak. And he becomes dumbfounded. Because he realizes the trash man isn't asking about physical garbage. He's asking about the garbage and the trash that's keeping him from experiencing what he needs to experience, the inner garbage. And Mo looks at him and says, "I have a lot of that garbage." And the trash man says, "I'm here to take it from you." And Mo says, "I don't even know how to get it." He said, "That's okay. I'll park my truck here. And I'll come into your house with you," quote unquote, the house of the body, "and I'll help you get it out." What I realize is I am a trash man to people today. That's the work that I do with people. That's the place where the trash that keeps us seeing what we see all the time is blocking us from seeing new realities.
Yeah.
And so the beauty of this book, The Mosaic, is not only in the characters that it tells us about. It's in the possibility that we could go through life looking at those people that we want so badly to disagree with, that we want so badly to hate? Do we want on first impression to say they're not anybody I want to be around? They're not telling the truth. They're not right or wrong. And we open up that possibility of what is the trash that I have in me that's keeping me from seeing a speck of goodness that's there. And if we could start to find that speck of goodness in an otherwise muddied being, and we could focus on that goodness, what we would find is a connection with another human being that we never even knew was possible.
Brings up two thoughts. First of all, nearly 40 years ago, I read a book that actually introduced me to my first wife and spoke of these kinds of ideas. The book was written by the late Og Mandino called The Greatest Miracle in the World. And it's,
love it.
And it spoke of rag pickers.
Yep.
And it's the same basic definition that you're speaking about here in the Mosaic in the 21st century. And
first of all, thank you for even putting me in the same sentence with that book. What a beautiful book that is.
I actually still have the four reel-to-reels of the book that I recorded. I recorded the book for a radio station that is going to be celebrating its 40th anniversary in October 2019. And I was one of its original board ops. People who worked behind the console, making sure that the mics were set in the levels and playing the commercials and this and that. Very first job in radio. And they actually allowed me, because I had my own equipment in my home, in my apartment, they allowed me to record this book, which was given to me on Thanksgiving by my best friend, who he and I went through grade school, high school, and college together. And he worked at a bookstore, and he was very much into inspirational books and self-help back in the late 70s and 80s, and gave this book to me. Because I was going through a rather low part at that point in my life, which was kind of weird because I'm pretty much of a very optimistic person, always have been. But yeah, we all have our days. And I read the book and it just hit me, and I'm going, I'm working for this radio reading service and I want to contribute more than, in spite of the fact that I failed the oral reading test. And to this day, folks, I have failed it 5 times. But look where I am. This is pretty cool. Failure is, as a matter of fact, there's a wonderful Netflix series or movie, I believe it is, documentary called Losers.
I've seen some of it.
Yeah, I've seen bits and pieces of it. I'm going to try to watch the whole thing. But anyway, so I recorded it, and it played the week of Christmas that particular year. It was quite phenomenal, the outcome of that particular work. I have two things. Number one is this book going to become an Audible if it isn't already?
Yes, it is. It's, I wanted someone to read it, and the people that work with me said, you have to read it because the quality of your voice is good and the emotion that you give to it will resonate because it's so meaningful to you. And it is hard for me to read. So we've tried several times. I have some of it recorded, but it has to become audible because the world is changing and people aren't sitting and reading as much as they used to. They're putting it on their phones and listening to it as they go to work or whatever, right? So yes, it has to be, and I have to make the commitment to just get it done.
Well, I'll tell you what. Following the program, maybe we'll talk a little bit about that.
I would love that.
The second thing is, you speak, and you made reference to this, and I want you to elaborate on this, but you speak about the Mosaic. Not as if you were the author, but as if you were the reviewer. You've read it cover to cover. It's made an impact on you. And whoever wrote this thing, you need to read it. That's the impression that I get. It's really interesting. In spite of the fact that we're here talking about connection here, connectivity, there's the disconnect. It's like, no, Daniel's not the author. He's the reviewer. He's read this thing and it's changed his life, and he wants everybody to know about it.
I love that. What an astute perception you have, because let me share with you the process of what happened when I was writing this book. I am its author, but I didn't write it. If that makes any sense to you at all, what happened is I thought the book would take me 2 or 3 months to write. I had written a story for a hotel in Hawaii that was the most anticipated hotel opening of 2015, and they asked me to write their story. And I asked what their story was. They said, we don't have one. So I took the core values that they believed in, and I crafted a love story from their core values that became the story of the hotel. And they used that story to hire staff, to share it with guests, to put it in the bedrooms of every person that stayed there. And it took me about 6 weeks to write. Mm-hmm. So I thought when I was coming to write this story that it would take about the same amount of time. But what happened in both stories was the characters of the story became more than what I was writing on the page. They actually became breathing, living parts of my life. And when I would write something that they didn't like, they would erase it. Or they would say, there's no way you can write that. You're not getting what we're saying. We're going to misplace that. So you have to rewrite it. And it was the most, you can ask my wife, I would be so happy with what I had created. And the next morning I would wake up and I would say, what the heck happened to it? It doesn't sound at all like what I thought it was. And it was because there is a connection to the characters in this book for me and for other people. If they allow the characters to actually speak, not only the words that are written on the page, but if they would listen to the spaces between the words.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If we would, in anything we do, I used to coach people a lot. I'm not doing that so much anymore. I'm looking for a new way to show up in the world where I'm not having to ask people for money or sell my services, because I don't believe that's the world we live in anymore. And I'm looking for a new paradigm, but I used to coach people a lot. And people would talk to me about things that are going on in their business, and they would tell me problems that existed. And I would always say to them, have you ever sat and asked your business what it wants? And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, your business is a living, breathing entity. Imagine it's a friend of yours. Why don't you speak to it? Why don't you ask it to tell you what it's looking for? What's missing in the world that we live in is the fact that we think we know everything, but we don't know everything. There are so many possibilities out there. If we would just start to question and ask, what is trying to happen here? And so, although I am the author of The Mosaic, I love that you say it's like I read it and reviewed it and want everybody to read it. Because I read it again today and I go, oh my God, that's what you're talking about. That's why you wouldn't let me do it. Because everything that I talk about on the podcast that I do and in the conversations that I have, most of it is not from the book.
Yeah.
It's from the space between the book, the story on the book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when you realize the world around us, for me, when I realize the world around me is a living, breathing reality, that it's purposeful. It has a voice that wants to be heard, just like we want to be heard, just like when everybody in the world wants to be listened to and accepted and acknowledged and validated. The world itself wants that. But we think it's a thing. And things don't have feelings or talk. That we think it's like a rock or a stone, that it's just an inanimate object. But it's not an inanimate object. It's a living, breathing reality. And when I speak of the mosaic is a living, breathing reality. And I wake up in the middle of the night. This morning I woke up at 3:30. I was just intoxicated with what the mosaic was whispering to me.
Yesterday, as I left work, and we had just had a little rain shower, I got in the truck, and the thing that struck me was what I was hearing. The sounds I was hearing were all of the birds that are in the area, in the trees and the shrubs and so forth. And I walked slower and slower to the truck. I was just enthralled.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm going to sit in the truck. And it was still sprinkling a little bit. So I thought, what the heck? I'll roll the window down. Mm-hmm. And I just sat there for at least 5 minutes.
Beautiful.
Listening to, and I have to say, the best way I can describe it is this cacophony. But it wasn't a problem. This cacophony was good. Okay. Mm-hmm. This was a good kind of, there was a good kind of a cacophony. This was it. And just listening to and trying to listen to the different sounds, the different chirps, if you will, and whistles and tweets and what have you. And I thought, wow, how many people who actually live in this area, and I'm working and I'm inside, so I don't hear it until I come outside. How many of the people who actually live around here sit outside or spend some time standing outside listening?
Yeah.
You know, try to filter out the traffic that goes by. And thank goodness it's a two-lane, one-way street that, you know, doesn't have a lot of traffic. And even when I started the engine of the truck, the engine was low enough to where, again, it didn't stop the birds from chirping, and I was afraid it would. And again, I sat there for another few minutes just taking it in.
Yeah.
Talk to me about our relationship, our connectedness to nature, and why, from your perspective and the Mosaic's perspective, that's important.
Fabulous. So I remember the first time I snorkeled in the ocean. I couldn't believe what I saw down there. Because up until the moment that I put on that snorkel and I paddled my way out into the ocean, when I looked at the ocean, it was just a body of water. It didn't have any life inside of it. I didn't know that there was anything in there. I didn't know that there was a whole world that existed underneath the sea. We live in a world where we don't see most of what is. Where we don't hear most of what is. I want to take your story and twist it a little bit too. Not only is there power in the sound and in the connection to nature, there's power in the sound of the silence that exists when we close our eyes and just listen to our own, the quiet of our own mind and body.
And by the way, in the background, I'm hearing birds at your end.
Isn't that great? Well, you know what? It isn't coincidental,
no,
right?
No, not at all. Not at all.
But there's a silence within us that we don't listen to. We're scared of that silence. We're scared to get to know ourselves, and I don't know why. We fill our lives with noise. We either have the TV on or the radio or something on that's playing so that we don't have to deal with the silence of what our own being wants to communicate to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the voice of this connected reality will never scream. It may scream if it hasn't gotten heard, it will probably eventually scream. But it isn't how it wants to communicate. The Mosaic wants to communicate through a whisper. And we won't hear that whisper if we fill ourselves up with the noise of the world around us. Just like I was saying before, we live in a time and in a world where we don't know ourselves. And how do we connect to anything if we can't even connect to ourselves? I so often say, what happens in the world around us is my silo meets your silo, and we think we're connected.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But we have no connection, and the reason why so many connections are empty is because we never allow the other person to just hold us and touch us and just embrace us and see us.
Back in the early 80s, when HIV and AIDS first came into the lexicon, I was working for a Christian station, And certainly they took the perspective that this was the fault of one group of people.
Yeah.
And that this is God's wrath, et cetera, blah, 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 blah. Well, what came to my mind was, and this was at the time when I still believed in the concept, even if it was just a concept, not necessarily the reality, of some being that was referred to as the devil, Satan, you know, Lucifer, the evil one. But what came to my mind was this was just another way to separate us. There was no real anything going on here, even though I know that people did die from the virus, the complications and so forth. My thought was, because of what was being said at the time, this is just a way to keep us separated. Mm-hmm. Well, what's going on right now in this country in particular, if not around the world, it's exactly the same thing. No matter how much time goes by, things don't seem to change much. What's happening now is just another way to keep us separated.
Okay. So let me again shift that and tilt that, okay?
Please.
In the classroom, growing up in school, when the teacher tries to teach us something and we don't learn it, what does she do? She looks for another way to teach it to us. And she looks for another way to teach it to us. And she looks for another way to teach it to us. And we'll repeat the grade. If we still can't learn it, we'll repeat the grade. Until we have enough situations that happen that we learn what it is we're trying to be taught. Mm. Instead of seeing these as situations where the world just continually tries to divide us, what would happen? And here's the paradigm shift. What would happen if we looked at the world that we live in and say, how many opportunities have you tried to give us to connect us together, to break through this thing that seems to apparently separate us, and to find that place where we are united, find that place where we are connected, find that place where everybody needs to feel loved and wants to feel loved and accepted and acknowledged and validated for who they are. It's easy to point the finger at somebody and say you're evil. It's hard to point the finger at somebody and say you're beautiful. Hmm. When will the opportunity be seen for what the opportunity is? As an opportunity for us to get beyond what we see, to see what we've never seen before, the beauty and sacredness of every individual that exists. In my story, The Mosaic, when Mo goes off and in search of heaven, which is where the adults have told him his parents are, that he desperately wants to find, he doesn't meet the archetypes that you would imagine would be the ones to point him to heaven. He meets common, ordinary people, and he almost misses the opportunity to enjoy them because he prejudges them. He said, well, that's just a dirty trash man, or that's just a homeless guy. Or that blind woman is just, she doesn't have anything for me. But he takes the time to sit with them because they're in his presence. And he says, maybe there's a reason for why we're being given the situation I'm being given. If we could ask ourselves, instead of knowing why it is that we see what we see, if we could ask ourselves, why are we being shown what we're seeing, and what is it you want us to see? We've been seeing the same thing and judging it the same way for all these years. Mm. Is there another way that we can see it? Is there another opportunity here? And in this world where our America is either pro-Trump or anti-Trump, what would be the vision that would trump all of those things? What would allow us, what is the opportunity and the possibility that this situation is giving us bigger than the person that's giving it to us?
Yeah. You know, and I've heard this from the psychological community, that bullies, deep inside, they're scared. There's a fear inside of them that causes them to behave the way they do to counter the fear that they have. They're scared.
Yeah.
And the thought that occurred to me as you were speaking this is, if one were able to get through the walls of this individual, what is it that you're so afraid of? That you have to put up these walls, no pun intended here, to defend yourself. What happened to you that made you have to protect yourself? Now, a lot of people in our world, they don't become bullies. What they do is they put on weight. They put on extra tissue on their bodies to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 8 9 to 1,000 pounds to protect themselves.
Yes.
And so forth. And then, of course, other people that will use other means, again, to protect themselves rather than dealing with the fear that is within them and that which they are afraid of.
So let me interrupt, if I may.
Please.
If you remember, I think in our previous conversation we spoke about it. There is a process of change that happens. And the process of change is when I learned this from my 29-year-old developmentally delayed daughter. When she spoke, and she doesn't speak like you and me, so it's hard. She's in a class of her own. But because we're so close, I understand most of what she says. But when she would speak to me and I wouldn't get it, she would yell it. She would scream, wanting me to hear it so badly that she thought maybe she wasn't speaking loud enough. But it wasn't the volume. It was the clarity. When she screamed and I still didn't get it, she would tantrum. And when she tantrumed and I still didn't get it, she would try to destroy something. The way she acts in the world is no different than the way everybody else acts in the world. Mm-hmm. When they speak and they don't get listened to, they scream. When they scream and they don't get listened to, they try and disrupt. And they try and create havoc. When they create havoc and they don't get listened to, they try and destroy something. It isn't a matter of why you don't listen. What is it that you can't hear?
Mm.
It's a matter of why we don't listen. What would it take for us to listen? And I'm one of those people that put on weight to protect myself because I live in a world that I feel. I'm an empath, so I experience so much. I walk into a room and I feel the pain of the people, so I literally try and protect myself with my body weight so that I don't have to feel it. It doesn't work. It still comes in. But I believe that if I can put a buffer between me and the world that I have no right to experience. I've never asked to experience your pain, but when I walk into the room, I feel you. And what would happen if we said, that's okay. We understand. Talk to us about this. Share that. Share your pain with us. That you don't have to be any way other than you are. Even the word of defining someone as a bully already makes them defensive.
Yeah.
They may be a bully, right? But mm-hmm. What would happen if we lived in a world where we didn't have to define by terms that make us defend ourselves, but we lived in a world that opened the world up that said, I love you and I respect you. I want to be here to help you. How can I help you do this in a way that will bring about some of the beautiful things you want to do? There's some, if I look at the Trump administration, It's in havoc. But if I look at some of the things that he's accomplished, some of them have been fabulous. Some mm-hmm. of them haven't been fabulous. Mm-hmm. But there have been some really good things that he's done in a fair amount of opposition, even though for 2 years he had the right to do whatever he wanted because Congress was on his side. But again, if you look at a man wanting to see something, you will see what you're looking to find. There's a saying in India that a pickpocket only sees the pockets of a saint. It doesn't see his beauty or his majesty. It only sees the pockets because that's all he wants. He wants to find a way, how do I get what he has and take it for myself? We have to stop being pickpockets and start being people that see that speck of humanity, that speck of beauty. And the more we polish that speck, the more we focus on it, the more that speck will come to front and center. and all the rest of the garbage and trash will become less and less.
Yeah. And this isn't about joining someone's side. This has nothing to do with being pro or anti anything.
It's about leaving the sides and coming to the middle.
That's it.
Because as long as you're on a side, you're not in the proper place.
Yeah. When I took this job that I currently have, I was working for a TV station, and I was working in master control. Similar. It was video, of course, television, but it was the same kind of job. And I found out about this job, and I was sharing that with the guys, and they said, you're going to go work for the dark side. And I said, what dark side? We're all on the same side, especially when it comes to wildfires and tsunamis and storms and this and that. We're all on the same side. Knock it off, you know. And I still feel that way. But you have opened up a door that we all need to walk through. There's no question about it, myself included. Because I sit and listen to the echo chambers of both sides of the political spectrum, and I hear the name calling. I hear the, not necessarily specifically the word bully, but I hear, you know, bully, 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 bully from both sides, you know, and I hear that kind of stuff, right? And I sit there going, how is this helping? How is this helping? And then you make the comment that you made. And I sit here and I say to myself, how is that helping? Mm-hmm. To refer to him as someone I didn't want because I didn't want a bully in the White House. Mm-hmm. You know, no politics whatsoever involved. Well, how is that any different than what the echo chambers are saying?
Totally.
It isn't.
And let's even personalize it more.
Oh, that's not enough, huh?
It is enough for this conversation. But if we were to personalize it even more, we don't need to go outside of ourselves to find that bullying that happens.
Yeah.
We do plenty of it within our own head.
Mm-hmm.
We do plenty of it on ourselves. We put ourselves down. We fight ourselves. We knock ourselves off what we believe. We sabotage what we're doing. We think we're not good enough. We fight ourselves when we decide something. Our natures have become natures of fighting rather than natures of surrendering.
Mm.
And when we realize that we don't have to fight for this world, the world is fighting for us. There's a benevolent world out there that has no sides. It only has a center. There's a great saint that came to America by the name of Yogananda. And he said the real consciousness of the world is center everywhere, circumference nowhere. But we live at circumference everywhere and center nowhere.
Yeah.
And as long as we live at circumference everywhere, we'll never be at the center. Why am I so impassioned by people taking a moment just to sit with themselves in the quiet and not even listen to the sound of the birds, but listen to the sound of the silence within them? Because that silence will thunderously roar when we allow it to communicate to us. And we will hear things we've never even dreamed were possible. We'll see places where we can connect with others that we never even imagined could be. We'll see the realities of the world, that we are not just this form, but we're energy, and there is no other to point the finger at. There is only us. We have to stop believing the lie that we believe, that we're separate and there's good and bad, that he's wrong and I'm right. We have to start to understand the reality that we are a connected universe. We are one voice. We are one people. We are one nation. We are one planet. We are one world. We are one space. And when we understand that, everything in the world changes, because everything that exists is because of the conflict of duality.
Yeah.
But the conflict of duality is only what we see. It is not what is.
Mm-hmm.
And science is telling us, metaphysics is telling us, that everything is whispering to us. And the more we move from this age of Kali Yuga into this age of Dwapara Yuga, into this age of energy, we'll start to see more and more. It'll become commonplace to us to understand that we're the energy that goes through this world and not the form, because the form will disappear. It won't be the focus of every conversation we have. We're at the lowest stage of the four stages of reality right now. And they take a long time. We've been in them for a long time. They're long periods of time, thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, you have referenced a gentleman and his work that has been my primer since I began what I refer to as my search, though I didn't have the privilege of traveling the world or the country. And I have to say that when you mentioned that, you know, there was a part of me that envied you that experience, because after the experience my wife and I had a couple of years ago around the holidays of traveling north to Yosemite and then to Nevada City, doing a 1,000-mile round trip and having no timetable per se, though there were some things that we wanted to do on a particular day, we weren't rushing. We're just taking our time, relaxed. It was the most stress-free experience that I can remember.
Wow.
And we also made the agreement that we weren't going to have any food. We weren't going to eat anywhere at fast food restaurants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I want to eat at those little diners, you know, that they're all over the place, up and down the road there. We even got off the main highway because it was just too congested and we were stressing. And so we started driving through between the farm fields, and it was fabulous.
Wow.
So I look forward to that experience myself. Once again, my wife and I want to take another little vacation, even if it's just for a few days, drive to the mountains or something like that. This is, again, it's an extraordinary journey that each one of us can take. The irony, I think, that you probably are very much aware of is that we don't have to go anywhere.
Absolutely.
And I jokingly say, especially when it comes to that aspect of like in the 60s, I guess it was, and even the 70s maybe, where people were saying, Mom, Dad, I'm not going to college. I'm going on the road to find myself.
Yep.
And it's like, but you're right there.
Yep.
And wherever you are is where you are, as the saying goes.
Yep. And it takes sometimes traveling a long way to understand that. Because most of us don't really have any idea what that means. And I know for myself, that was the journey that I had. I had to travel thousands and thousands and thousands of miles, searching in every place that I could find to find the one thing that was with me the whole time that I never saw before. Because we get blinded by the world that we live in. Mm-hmm. We get blinded by a world that says, make more money, be more successful, show the world who you are, that you are more than you are. And so we paint the silos of our walls of protection with images that we believe the world wants us to be.
Mm.
And we start to believe the painted silo is who we are rather than the person we are behind that, because we're ashamed that we may not be as good as other people are.
Yeah.
And so we hide in those silos. So it takes a lot sometimes to sit comfortably at peace with that beautiful person that we are.
Yeah.
I say often, if I could give people one gift, I wish I could give them the gift of seeing how exquisitely beautiful who they are is.
You know, that would be an incredible gift to give. Because what came to mind as you said that was this concept that there are six different views of self. And I can't remember all of them, but a few of them are the way I see myself, obviously,
mm-hmm.
the way I think others see me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a third would be the way I think others think I see myself, and so on and so forth. I'm not sure exactly
the way others actually see me,
and on and on and on. And it's like those six aspects, it's only the first one, that is really of utmost importance. But the question is, what is it that you're seeing? And it goes back to what you said earlier, you know, that at least in this world, what we see isn't what's real. But that's hard to get through for a lot of us, because
of course it is.
You know, I mean, you know, I'm 59, you're 63,
and
so we've lived a fairly good long time, although I still say it's just a puff of smoke in the infinity of the universe. But still, so I've kind of got my self, the self view. It's kind of solidified to some degree. What is the best dissolving agent, shall we say?
Remember, we see what we're looking to find.
Ah.
And so as long as we see a solidified version of ourselves, that's what we'll find. One of the things that is disheartening and really just so scary for most people is a lot of the time the work that I do with people is I ask them, what would happen if just in this space that we hold together, you allowed yourself the freedom to no longer believe what you believe? What would you actually be able to believe now? What if you didn't believe you were limited? What if you didn't believe it wasn't possible? What if you didn't believe that you're a solidified version of yourself? What if you didn't believe that what you see is what is? What if you didn't believe that it wasn't possible? What would be possible if you put aside for a moment those things you believe? In India, they have a beautiful custom. When you walk into a house, you leave your shoes by the door. What would happen if when you walked into your own being, you left your beliefs at the door? You can put them on as soon as you go out. What would happen if you took the time to actually listen to the voice within you that you've never listened to before? What would happen if you allowed the silence to whisper to you rather than drown it out with the noise of your own mind? What would happen if you allowed your heart to literally love you in the way it wants to love you? What would happen if we stopped judging other people and started loving ourselves? What would those simple questions start to reveal in us that we haven't ever wanted to look at? And why are we so scared to look at them? What are we scared to find if we go inside ourselves? There's nothing wrong with us. We all take all the time we need to come around. We go thousands of miles on a journey to find what we've been carrying with us on the whole journey. There's no shame in finally realizing that I don't know myself. But there, once you know that you don't know yourself, why don't you take a moment and just say, I'm going to get to know myself now. I'm going to find somebody I can work with or play with or just talk to that will help me open up doors to myself that I don't want to open up, that I'm scared to open up, but I trust them enough to allow them to hold the space for me to be safe in those places so that I can explore in different areas.
Great words of advice. The Mosaic Online is the website, ladies and gentlemen, if you are interested in continuing to pursue this conversation via the book, The Mosaic. The Mosaic is a magical story of seeing the unseen, a method to experience the power of connection and an opportunity to become part of a movement of love that will change the world. I know that for a lot of us, Daniel, some of this advice, especially towards those that we have deemed adversaries, is going to take a little work. But, you know, anything worth having, I would say, is going to take a little work. Doesn't necessarily mean it has to be hard and arduous, but you still have to do the work.
And so if I can say, I just had a conversation with somebody the other day and we were talking about something and I said, this is the way I think. And she said, I agree with you, but we just can't do it now. The world won't let us do it. And I said, if those of us who believe that the truth is what we believe and we don't have the courage to go against a force that we believe is not ready to have it, how will this ever change? The people that listen to this show are conscious people. They know how you believe. They know what you think. Mm-hmm. If we don't have the courage to stand by what we believe, to not only believe in something and speak it, but live it and do it, If we don't have the courage to do it, who will? We're the ones that believe in it.
Yeah. An interesting sidebar to that would be a conversation we won't have now, but in regards to the issue of climate change, okay?
Yeah.
I was talking with somebody about this the other day, and I said, you know what, I'm tired of talking about it from the standpoint of the science. I said, throw the science out. Forget about the science. You know, shouldn't we just take care of our home? I mean, you know, you clean your house, you and your wife, you do the vacuuming and the dusting, you do the dishes, the clothes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, why do you do that? Well, because we want to live in a nice, clean place. Well, then why shouldn't we do that to the home on which we live, the earth?
Beautiful.
To which the response was, well, that's all fine, well, and good, but we're going to be the only ones that are going to be doing it. Mm-hmm. To which I responded, well, somebody's got to start. You can't wait for other people who it's that old argument. Well, I'll start if you start. Well, I'll start if you start. No, right. You have to start first. No, you start first.
Right.
And it's like with what you're proposing, doesn't matter whether anybody else is doing it. There's this question that if there was nobody around watching you and judging you, would you still do the right thing? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people would certainly say yes.
Yeah.
Why? Nobody's watching you. And you're saying that unless other people who are watching are doing the same thing, you're not going to deal with climate change? That makes no sense. Because so you just said doing the right thing doesn't matter whether anybody's watching.
Totally.
So when we're trying to evolve and raise our consciousness and that of the community, the country, the planet, it doesn't matter if anybody else is doing it.
Let me tilt that even a little further.
Please
if you don't
do.
Mind, because that's what I do. I'm a disruptor, okay? If you live in a world of duality where you believe that we are separate, then everything you're saying makes complete sense. Why should I be the one to start? You start. I don't want to be the only one doing it. You do it. But when we realize that we live in a world that is one, the very fact that I am doing it, you are doing it too. And you may not be doing it to the level that I'm doing it at, but everything has a beginning and a middle and an end. By the fact that I am doing anything, means you're doing it as well. And so if we could see the world not from I'll do it if you do it, but because you're doing it, I have to do it because you and I are the same. Because I'm doing it, you'll have to do it because you and I are the same. How do we bring that reality that we are not separate, but we are similar, we are the same. We are one force working together to create the one force that we want to create in the one force that we live in. Hmm. Completely different reality.
We've talked about the mosaic solution. We've talked about the problem. And there is an equation, if you will, a numerical equation that people can certainly investigate as well on your website. And the basic, I shouldn't say equation. That's not what it is. It's 4-4-1, all right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you talk about this on the website in reference to the solution. 4 connections, 4 practices, 1 connected world. Before we wrap up, talk to us about, first of all, the 4 connections.
Okay. Most of the reason why we don't connect well with each other is we try and go from 0 to 4 without doing 1, 2, and 3. Most people, when I ask them what connection is, say it's connection to another person or connection to nature or connection to something else. That is the 4th connection. Connection to other is the 4th connection, but there are 3 connections that precede that. The first is connection to self, which we've already talked about a little bit, and how little people know themselves. The second is a connection to source, when we realize that there is something bigger than us. There's something that is at play in this world that when we tune into it, it will support us. It's a benevolent force that will support us and help us to achieve things that we can't achieve on our own. The third connection is a connection to purpose, that when we now take a kind, loving being and they're vulnerable and they allow a force bigger than themselves to help shape and move their actions, suddenly they understand they have a purpose in the world, and that purpose is to whatever it is to do. But when I ask people in general, do you know what you're here? Do you know why were you created in this planet? Almost 95% of them say, I don't know. I have no idea. So when I ask people if do they know themselves, they say, I don't know, really. So if you take a person that doesn't know themselves and take a person and that same person doesn't know where he's going, what do you give the odds of success to that person being in making an impact in the world? Not very high. But when we connect ourselves and connect the source and connect the purpose, that's the time when the world has known throughout the world, where the four step of building your mosaic, the connection to each other, really takes fold. And if we look at the creation of most things that happen in the world that we know, it's always been a small group of people that have come together, that have been open to each other, that have been kind and loving, that have not accused other people, that have been humble and there for each other, that have realized there's something bigger at play, that they know that they're purposely there to do. Those are the people that have created movements of change that have affected the whole world. And that's the beauty of the 441. Their practices that are their practices for each one of those connections that are easy. They're simple. They might not be easy. Mm-hmm. They're simple. Everybody can understand them. But those practices are being kind to yourself. That will be what connects you to yourself. Being vulnerable. That will be what allows you to feel something bigger than you coming and working in your life, knowing that you're not in control. There's something else there. And if you're vulnerable to that, you open yourself up to that power that it can enter you. There, knowing what you're here to do, doing your purpose is there's a practice of doing what you came here to do and not doing anything other than what you came to do. When you know where you're going, the route is clear. When you don't know where you're going, any road you take will get you there. So knowing where you're going is so important to get to where you're going. And the fourth practice of Build the Mosaic is to connect them with others, to be open and allow your openness and your kindness and your connect and the people that you draw to yourself to actually come into your mosaic and build something together that will create a change that the world will marvel at. They won't even know what hit them. They won't even know how it happened. And they don't have to, because it will happen. And what we see today can change in one moment, because what we see is only what we see. As soon as I think I've talked to you about it before, that picture of the old hag and the young socialite. You mm-hmm. remember that picture?
I do, yeah.
Well, when I first saw it, I saw the old hag. I didn't see the young socialite. People said, can't you see her? She's right there, and the feather's coming out of her, out the top of her head, and the chin of the old hag is actually the neck of the socialite. I said, I don't see it, until finally I saw it. Well, that same change of perception is going to happen to the world that we live in. We just can't see it yet. But it doesn't mean it's not there. The world that we want is right there before our eyes. We just don't see it and haven't given sight to it. Mm. When we choose to see it, we will see it in a moment. It doesn't take a lot of work. It's not a struggle. It's just a change of perception.
Yeah, exactly. You also have something we talked about in our last interview, and I was absolutely fascinated by the conversation we had in regards to the Be Kind to You bracelet and the concept behind that. And I just, and I'm sitting here and I was reading through the instructions, and all of a sudden I was going to say, so if I started asking myself a particular question. And immediately, before I even finished the question, the response came back, if you're asking that question, you're being unkind to yourself.
Wow.
And that had to do with what we talked about earlier in the program. I don't want a bully in the White House.
Right.
That's not him. That's me.
Yeah.
That's me. Yep. Because that's what I'm looking for. So now I'm not being kind to my... Okay, so now I got to move the bracelet from the left wrist to the right wrist and start all over with day one. Tell me, last time you shared with us, you'd been doing it for 6 months. Now it's been about 8 or 9 months. I'm curious as to how far you've gotten.
I've gotten to day 8 once.
Congratulations.
And I am back on day one today. It is for me, I would think it would be so simple to be kind to myself.
Yeah.
But it is so hard because I watch, you know, I get stressed out and I eat something that I know isn't good for me. I find that, you know, I want to do something and I say, no, I can't do that. I get ready to engage in an activity and I say, no, I don't believe I'm able. I'm the one to do that. I'm going to let somebody else do that. There's so many different variations of the way that I treat myself unkindly by criticizing myself or criticizing others.
Yeah.
Here's an amazing thing for us to think about. It happened in my book within the character called the Mirror Maker. And when Mo came into this village, there was only one shop open. So he walked into the village and he was interested to see that there was it was a shop full of mirrors and there was nobody in the shop. So he thought, I'm going to call out, but he wasn't buying a mirror. He was just walking into the shop because it was the one that's opened and the door opened and he walked in. And he started to walk around and he looked at the things that were there in front of him and he looked at the mirrors and he found one that he really liked that was beautiful and just it was almost transparent in its ability to show himself. And out of the blue, a woman from the back came and said, "Hi, sir, can I help you? What are you looking for?" And he said, "Oh, I'm really just here. I'm just looking at these beautiful mirrors. Not only the frame of the mirrors are beautiful, but the mirrors themselves are beautiful." And she said to him, "What do you see when you look in the mirror?" And he said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, most people see only the stories that they tell themselves about themselves. What do you see?" And he said, "I'm afraid I see the same thing. I don't see myself. I see the stories that I tell myself about myself. When I look at you in the mirror, when you're standing here with me, I look at you and I don't have any stories about you. So I think I see you very clearly." And so she said, "All this time you've been learning from the characters that you've met how to see what you don't see. Now I want you to learn to see what you do see." Mm. And when you realize that what you see when you look in the mirror will be the same thing that you see when you look into the world around you, that will be the moment of transformation for you. Because what we see is not a world out here that is different than us. What we see is the world inside of ourselves that we see everywhere we turn. And when we can see ourselves as we actually are, when we can see ourselves and love ourselves with that Be Kind to You bracelet, when we can see ourselves and not criticize ourselves and put us down, we'll start criticizing the world around us. We won't find any fault in it because there'll be nothing there to see except the love that we have for each other. That's why the simple transformational practice could be as simple as wearing a simple little band on your wrist that we criticize ourselves for not being further along than we are and not getting to 21 consecutive days quickly. Yeah. But that isn't the practice. The practice is to become aware every day, every minute of how we see ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the way we see ourselves, the whole world will change. The way we see the world will change. What we see in Trump is only a reflection of what we see in ourselves.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. It's funny, too, because I was traveling here in Santa Barbara to a location where I was to do an interview with someone, a remote interview. Had my little digital recorder, a couple microphones, mic stands, table stands. And I'd been there before many times, but I still had it wired up to my GPS just so I could get there. I circled the thing at least 10 times because for some reason, I was just discombobulated. And at one point along this circumnavigation, I said, "You know what? First of all, I'm fine on time. It's not quite time to be there. So just relax." And I started to enjoy the scenery as opposed to trying to find where I was supposed to go. And I finally pulled off and I checked the GPS and it's like, wait a minute, I should be right here because it's showing the stars right there, you know, the pin. How is it that I'm not? And then the phone rang and it was the gal I was supposed to interview. And I told her where I was and she's, "Oh, well, it's right behind you."
Wow. Wow.
But it wasn't so much that, of course, I finally found the place. We did the interview. It was, I need to focus on my surroundings. I need to focus on the journey. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about it's 21 days, you've made it 8. It's not about getting to 21. Mm-hmm. Although that would be nice. It's a wonderful goal to shoot for. And maybe one day you might make it and I might make it. But it's what we learn along the way.
Totally. Totally. When one of the biggest lessons I learned from my book is when I met the traveler. And the traveler told me there is a beginning, a middle, and an end to everything that exists in the world. Normally, I ask people, what are the three things that exist in everything that exists? And people who are metaphysical tell me all sorts of metaphysical answers. People who are, you know, physical don't have no idea. They said, I don't know. And they try and come up with the three things. The simple reality is that everything that exists has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Mm-hmm.
And my life has been, I've been very good at starting things and very good at ending things. I see the end already, and it frustrates me to be in the middle. So I race to the end. The whole journey of the mosaic is a journey of the middle. The whole journey of its story is to take time to stop rushing, to take time to enjoy the conversations of the simple people that you meet. It isn't about meeting my trash man. It's about meeting the person in the line in front of you when you're getting a coffee. It's about sitting next to the person that you're sitting next to in the theater and saying, how are you? It's about taking a moment to pause the speed of the world that we live in with no destination in mind, but just the enjoyment of this moment. And that has been so hard for me. Because I always want to be somewhere other than I am.
Mm.
I always want this phase to end so I can start something else. But what's wrong with being right where I am?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember a conversation with my brother, and I said, I just feel stuck. Nothing's moving in the way I want it to move. And he said, stuck in relationship to what? And I said, that's brilliant. Because it's stuck in relationship to the thought that I'm supposed to be somewhere other than I am.
Yeah.
But if I know that where I am is exactly where I'm meant to be in this moment, there is no stuck. There's just the enjoyment of this moment, whatever it has to offer.
In a personal growth program I was in, first day, first evening, of course, they all know they've done this many, the facilitators have done this many times, so they know the attitude of the people coming in. And they were saying, oh, a lot of you people are frustrated, you're angry, you're upset, you're da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and you don't want to be here. Well, I'm here to tell you that if you didn't want to be here, you wouldn't be. So you're here, so it must be where you want to be.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And it was like, oh, darn.
Totally.
You
totally.
Caught me. You know, totally. before we wrap up, one other element that I would, because I just did this. I actually just did this, and I think it's kind of cool. I love how you make this available to the viewer of your website, which is, of course, themosaiconline.com. And that is, folks can get a card reading. Mm-hmm. You can allow the mosaic to guide you. And it's the equivalent, if you will, of tarot cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go ahead and share what popped up. At least for me, just as far as the cards, I went there, I put my email address and my name in, and I got the trash man, the photographer, and the programmer in that order, past, present, future, respectively. And then, of course, gives you information on that, and it can be kind of insightful. And I've actually believed, again, that there are coincidences, not coincidences.
I love that.
And that whatever is happening in your life at this moment, whether you're drawing cards from the tarot, whether you're driving down the road and somebody pulls out in front of you, regardless of whatever the circumstance is, the event, the incident is, that's yours. That's for you. That's a gift. Yes. That's been given you. And I think that it's one of those things that, and we talked last time about my little accident back in November of 2018. That was a gift. I didn't know what was in the box at the time, you know, and who knows what it will lead to, and on and on and on. And this interview, and the first one, and this second one, and I guarantee you there's going to be a third and a fourth. These are all gifts that not only am I giving to me, to you, Daniel, but also to the listeners, because when we tap into this kind of information, we start listening. It's like what you were saying before. We start listening. We start really, really seeing what is real.
Yeah.
Boy, it just, I mean, I sit here right now and my mind's jumping ahead a little bit to, I'm going to get that studio cleaned up. I'm going to start using that sound booth that I have in my studio, and I'm going to create something, and it's going to be very cool. I don't know what it is yet. I really don't.
Wow.
So,
I love that. And what I find is oftentimes when inspiration comes, it just gives us what it is we do. We don't have to know how, we don't have to know what the purpose of it is. We just have to follow the link, because one of the reasons why I created the card deck is, and I know it's like a tarot, and for people who understand that, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I didn't call them tarot cards because I don't want to spiritualize something that's just a perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And so what my intention was in all of it is to just say, if we would take a moment and allow the world to speak to us, what would it say? Mm-hmm. And why not offer these some perspectives from simple, ordinary people that might help us to revamp or re-see or re-look at the world that we're looking at through the question we ask and these answers that sometimes seem irrelevant. But I guarantee you, everything that they say in them, if you look at them and hear what they say and see what they're showing, will prove to be insightful and valuable. I don't know how it happens, but every moment the world is looking for opportunities to speak to us.
Mm-hmm.
And when we take the moment to pause, like you just had this thing, I'm going to clean up that studio and I'm going to start to do something. I don't know what it is. You don't have to. Just go and do it.
Yeah.
Do exactly. What's right in front of you. You heard it. Now practice it. Go and do it and live it.
Yeah.
Because there's something beautiful that will come. And you have such a big work in front of you. And it's so beautiful. And I can't wait to watch it unfold, to help it unfold if I can, to be a part of its unfolding if I can. Because there's something amazing in what you have and what you do. You're really good at what you do.
Yeah, thank you.
And even the simple thing of just saying, tell me your story, that's so mosaic. We're so in sync. Mm. Because if,
you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I remember... everything okay there?
Yeah, no.
Okay. I remember when my wife, my second wife and I decided to get married in our backyard in Phoenix. I wanted to do something. I wanted to create something of meaning for the ceremony. And so I came up with this idea of building from scratch and trying not to use any electrical tools. I wanted to use all hand tools, and I chose to build this arch made out of limbs from, oh, I can't remember what kind of a tree it was. Maybe it was eucalyptus, might have been cedar, I can't remember. Anyway, and I wanted to do it all by myself, okay? Wow. I wanted to have that experience of doing it by myself. Well, my neighbor, who was a very dear friend of both of ours, and he ended up coming to live with us when he lost the lease on the home that he was living across the street from us, he came over one day while I was working on it. And of course, I was trying to do it incognito if I could. Not that I was, again, I wanted to do it by myself because I knew that if he saw what I was doing, he'd want to help, because that's the kind of guy he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to tell him no, and I explained it to him. You know, but I look back on that and I'm going, well, he's so much of a part of our lives, my wife's and mine, that part of me sort of goes, boy, I wish I had let him help me with that.
Yeah.
I didn't, but I, you know, And when you have said the words that you have said about being a part of what we're doing here, and of course the flip as well, me being a part of what you're doing, I'm sitting here going, you know what? I'm not going to turn anybody down, because as much fun as it is to produce commercials, and I can't do it by myself because I have to have somebody come in and read the script, especially if it's an advertiser or a nonprofit who's got a spokesperson. And then I produce it, and then I send it off, and they approve or disapprove or make changes or what have you, and we finally get it done. I, in spite of the fact there's a lot of aspects where I do work solo, there's nothing like that experience, that shared experience, that community, and of course, if I may use the word, that connection.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. We were never meant to do things on our own. We can do them on our own, and we can be successful to at it to a certain extent. But we'll never see beyond what we can see if we stay alone. And there are amazing things. We've gone way over our time, I'm sure. So I'll save this a story for the next time we speak, in the event that we have it next time.
Oh, we will.
But there are amazing realities that happen when we allow the reality of the collected mind, the mosaic mind, to come together and function. It is mind-boggling what's possible.
Daniel Levin, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program, sharing with us the mosaic. I can't encourage you folks enough to go to the Mosaic Online and take advantage of many of the opportunities that are available to you, the coincidences, don't you think? Maybe yes. Even get yourself one of these Be Kind to You bracelets and begin your 21-day journey that could take you 21 years. Who knows? But it's not so much how long it takes. It's what you learn along the way that is so about yourself, specifically and exclusively about who you really are. And Daniel, I want to thank you once again for joining us here on the program. We are going to have you back again. We'll set up something for maybe midsummer, mid-late summer, and have you back again. And who knows, maybe, just maybe, either A, I will come down to the San Diego area and we'll sit face-to-face and we'll have a little chat.
Perfect.
B, you'll come up to Santa Barbara and we'll sit face-to-face and have a little chat.
Perfect.
Or we'll meet somewhere in the middle, although I'm not sure this is exactly the middle, L.A.
That's right.
Because I'm afraid that if it was really the middle, it'd be somewhere in the middle of the desert.
That's right.
And we'll sit down and have a little chat face-to-face. But either way, no matter how it happens, we will have you back, because these conversations are wonderful. I am certainly assured that folks are going to glean a great deal from this program, and I encourage you to go to themosaiconline.com and check it out. We will be linked to Daniel's website. Daniel Bruce Levin has been my guest, the book The Mosaic, and we hope that you will join us again. Daniel, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, and I can't encourage people enough to pick up a copy of The Mosaic. It will change your life.
Draw some of those cards, folks. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.